Okay, so today we're going to talk about building rewards. And of course, Parshas Shmos starts with a story of the Jewish people's slavery. So first of all, a new king rises. The new king doesn't know who Yosef is. Whether he's a new king or not a new king is a subject of discussion. But the truth is that it's impossible for the king not to know who Yosef is, because even if he's a new king, or if he's the same king, he had to know a little bit of Egyptian history. It's not possible for one president not to know who the president before him was. It just doesn't make any sense. So obviously, there was all kind of nefarious intent over here, and the Pharaoh realizes he has a problem on his hands. He is dealing with a Jewish issue, a Jewish problem. Too many Jews. So he looks for a final solution. And he calls together his advisors. Yisro is an advisor. Eov is an advisor. And Bilam is an advisor. And Bilam is the one who gives him the advice. You have a Jewish problem, you need a final solution. Okay, how do we implement the final solution? So first they start to demoralize and break the people. That doesn't work. Then they begin intense, heavy labor, backbreaking labor that could destroy a person's very, very psyche, self-confidence. Doesn't work. And so the third phase of slavery begins when the Pharaoh calls the two midwives of the Jewish people, and he says to them, look, I want you to start killing the babies. That is going to demoralize them. That's going to break them. You'll see as soon as they're born, you say, sorry, stillborn, didn't make it. Now, the whole notion that there was two midwives for a nation of people is a little bit hard to understand altogether. Clearly, the Jewish people were very adept at birthing and having babies, because there's only two midwives. They didn't really need the midwives, which is exactly what the midwife said. And that picks up today's class. We're going to start with Sheni. So what happened is the midwives did not listen to the Pharaoh. And the Torah says, "Vatchayenu sayilodim." On the contrary, not only did they not snuff out the lives of the babies, but they gave life to the babies. Chapter 1 of the book of Exodus, we're going to take a look at verse 18. "Vayikra melech Mitzrayim lemiyaldes." So the king of Egypt calls these midwives in. He says to them, "Madua asisim es hadavar hazeh? Why did you do this? Why didn't you follow orders?" Not only did you not kill the babies, but in fact, you gave them life. What's going on over here? He's demanding an answer. So we have a problem on our hands. I mean, this is people called in front of the Gestapo, and they said, "You got orders, you didn't follow orders." You know what happens if you don't follow orders? You're finished. That's it. Vatoimarno hamiyalde salpare. So the miyalde said to the Pharaoh, "Ki loy hanoshim hamitzriyis ha'ivriyis." You don't understand the Jewish women. They're very different. They're not the same. It doesn't work the way you understand, the way you know birth to be. The Jewish women are very different than the Egyptian women. Ki choyos, because they're choyos. We'll soon see what that means. Hine b'terem tovei aleihen hamiyaldes. Because they are choyos, which we had not yet translated, we're just going to say choyos, because they're choyos. Before we get there, before the midwives arrive, vayalod, and they've already given birth. So this was supposed to be a surreptitious plan, where the woman would be in the middle of giving birth, they would have no clue what's going on, and then the midwife would say, "Sorry, the baby didn't make it, it's a stillborn. Another stillborn, a lot of stillborns, I don't know, we don't know what's going on." But they wouldn't, the Pharaoh didn't want it to be in an overt way. He didn't want it to be obvious they were killing the babies. He wanted to do it in a secret way. So that's what he kind of tapped the Mialdis. He didn't just send the Gestapo to go around killing all the babies. He says, "You go on the birthing stool when they're giving birth. That's when you snuff out the lives. It's not a big deal to kill a baby. Suffocate the baby. That's it. Finished." So they said it doesn't work. The woman, they know exactly what's going on. They're chayos. Before we come, the baby is born already. So if we would kill the baby, then that would be overt, open, act of murder. They would know we were killing the babies. The Pharaoh didn't want that. It's very chilling that the Nazis also try to conceal their nefarious deeds. You know what they used to call the gas chambers, where people that were slated for
showers.
Showers. But you know what it was called on the papers? It's called Sonderbehandlung. special care. Special treatment. That's what they call it. That was the code name. Special treatment gas chambers. They didn't even want to leave paper records behind. They tried to destroy all the records. If they have had the druthers, they would have destroyed all the evidence before. The problem was the war ended before they realized. It ended too quickly for them. They wanted to destroy all the evidence. They wanted to have everything burnt, all the ashes dumped. Nobody should know what they did. They didn't even want to leave a paper trail behind. So this is an old tactic. The anti-Semites never want to tell everybody what they're doing. They want to deal with it very quietly. As they say in Yiddish, unter den Tisch, you know? Under the table, quietly, sweep it under the carpet. Nobody should know about it. And the Pharaoh played the same game. So the Jewish woman responded and they said, your efforts are not going to work. So let's take a look at Rashi. What does Miki Choye say now? Why would they do it?
What makes you think that? What made him think that those two, right?
Because first of all, those two were the only two. He called whatever midwives, Jewish midwives he had. The Jewish midwives didn't use Egyptian midwives. The Jewish woman used Jewish midwives.
Right.
And as you're going to see, what they said wasn't a lie. It was true. The Jewish woman did give birth on their own. Mm-hmm. The midwives would really come along at the last moment, in the 11th hour, or later even. Mm-hmm. Now, obviously, they overdid it. Right? They risked their lives. What made the Pharaoh think that they would listen? They were going to be killed otherwise. Simple solution. You kill or be killed. Most people in there in a position of kill or be killed, what would they do?
They kill.
Stay alive. There wasn't a handful of capos during World War One, World War II. I mean, there were many Jews, unfortunately, who they do what? What could they do? Who do you think manned the gas chambers? Not the putting of gas, the removal of the bodies. It was all Jews. Most of the Jews who were killed, very few survivors from the Sonderkommando, they used to call them. They got the Jews to do the dirty work. So the Pharaoh didn't want to do this himself. And anyway, if he didn't have a choice here, if he would bring in some kind of Dr. Mengele, they would know something was wrong. The people would be suspicious. And then the woman would hide and they wouldn't give birth. They weren't like exactly in concentration camp. They were in a ghetto. So if you knew that the Egyptians were killing your babies, what would the Jews do? They would give birth elsewhere. By the way, I was just reading yesterday the story of a woman who birthed over 3,000 babies in Auschwitz. I don't even understand how it's possible, but this is a documented story. A Polish woman who ended up in Auschwitz and she birthed over 3,000 babies.
Jewish woman?
Huh?
Jewish woman?
Yeah, Jewish babies. I don't know if she was Jewish, no. I think she's a Polish woman. You Google it. It's one of these historical things. At any rate, the only way the Pharaoh's plan could work here was if Shifra and Pua would have partnered with him. Because otherwise the Jewish woman would not allow this to happen. They would hide. They wouldn't tell anybody when they were giving a baby. So the Pharaoh calls them in. He says, it's a failure. No babies are dying. On the contrary, the Jewish population is growing. So they said, your plan can't work. Why? Ki choyos heino. So Rashi says that the word choyos means bikiyos. It means very skilled, expert. Kimiyaldes. It means the average woman is like a doula, like a midwife herself. And she knows what she's doing. She doesn't need anybody's help. Rashi says that the Targum, the Unkelus's rendering of the word miyaldos is chayosa. Usually chayos comes from the word chayos, which means life. So chayos means that they're very lively. They have a lot of life. But how would that answer the question? How would that explain why they didn't do what they did? Unless we say that chayos means skilled, but doesn't really mean skilled. Bikiyos means skilled. That's what Rashi says. What is chayos? Chayos is bikiyos. So why doesn't the Torah say bikiyos? So the answer is, if we look at Unkelus, we see that Unkelus interprets the word miyaldos, which means a person who has the skill of delivering a baby. He interprets the word of miyaldos, skilled in delivering, as chayosa. Because chayos means life, and the person who helps deliver a baby helps deliver life. So therefore, the skill of delivering a baby became known as chayos. And we can see that from Unkelus' translation. So that is the literal, straightforward way to explain the concept of chayos. Now Rashbam, Rashi's grandson, expands on this a little bit. He says they're very healthy. And because they're so healthy, even when they're in the middle of giving birth, they don't lose themselves. They're still on top of the game. They still know exactly what they're doing. And they're still the ones who are calling the shots. So that's what he says. And he says also, chayas means very lively. They give birth very quickly. It's not the usual long, drawn out process of going through all the pain of laboring until eventually the baby's born. No, it's very, very quick. The Ibn Ezra also, takes that similar approach. He says, chayos means that they have koyach chayim harbe, a lot of life. They pulsate with life. They're very healthy. Or the Mincha Belula says it means that they're medically knowledgeable, which is the science of medicine is about preserving life or restoring life. So chayas is connected to life. But Rashi doesn't. He says no. Chayas means it's skilled, because even if somebody could be very lively, you know, somebody could have a lot of life. Having a baby is a big deal. When you have a baby, you don't know what's going on. You're screaming in pain. No, Rashi says chayas means they were very skilled. They could deliver their own babies, which is essentially what they did. Now, I don't know if this means they delivered their own babies then, or that every home had help, and the people in the house knew how to deliver babies, which makes a lot more sense. If we say chayas means they themselves are very, very strong. I mean, anybody's ever seen a woman give birth? It's you're as strong as you want, but still, giving birth is a major event. You don't know exactly what's going on. Who could deliver their own baby? But the way Rashi explains it, it makes perfect sense. Chayas doesn't mean the woman themselves only. He says the Jewish women are chayas. The Jewish women are all midwives. So every home, there was a mother, a sister, a sister-in-law, a daughter. There were people in the house. The people in the house don't need the professionals. The people in the house know exactly what they're doing. By the time they call the midwives, it's all done. The baby's born already.
So what purpose do they serve?
So therefore Rashi actually says, that's what they called Shifra and Pua. So Shifra was like, Yecheved was like the doctor, first doctor visit. She came and straightened out the limbs of the baby. She would come in and wrap the baby. That was after the birth. And the baby would cry. Yecheved was very adept, a little girl, very adept at cooing to the baby. She would make little noises and calm the baby down. So, but the baby would be born before Shifra and Pua would actually come, which explains something else, how it's possible for two women to be midwives for a whole nation.
But it's still, there's something that's inconsistent, because Baruch said to kill the baby boys when they're born. You have to prove that those baby boys are born. So how come he doesn't snatch them and kill them?
If the Pharaoh wanted to snatch them and kill them openly, he didn't need Shifra and Pua. He just calls his soldiers, his men and women SS officers, and sends them in to kill the babies. For that matter, why do you have to kill them when they're born? Just kill Jewish kids whenever you want. Just come in there and say, chop up any Jewish kids you see.
You wanted to keep it hush-hush.
So what's the hush-hush way to do it? First of all, don't get your hands dirty. Let the Jewish woman be the murderers. How nefarious is that? Let them kill the babies. I didn't do anything. So his hands are clean. He had the Jewish woman kill their own babies, and nobody knows what's going on.
Why was he so concerned to keep it hush-hush?
This is always the way it is. Why were the Nazis so careful about keeping it hush-hush? So, I don't want to have a rebellion on his hands. One day he announced, I'm going to kill all your babies. He was afraid what this could bring. He wanted to keep everything under control. In the end, he had no choice, by the way. In the end, he throws all the babies into the river. That's the next level. So Rashi says that's the meaning of chayas. The problem, of course, with Rashi's interpretation is that, you know, Rashbam, Mincha Belula, Ibn Ezra, they seem right. They seem right because chayas sounds like the woman themselves. That's what it sounds like. It doesn't sound like the other woman, the other people around there. But if it's the people themselves, then it doesn't really add up. And Pshuta Shel Mikra, it's very hard to imagine every single woman gave birth by herself. Well, then why do we use the word chayos? Chayos means they are chayos. They have life. That's literally, it means they have life. So therefore, Rashi, as he's wont to do when he has a word that's being used that doesn't exactly fit with the way we might understand the word, he reaches for a drush. So the drush that Rashi reaches for here is Rabbi Seno Darshu, a rabbi is expounded, and here he refers... Excuse me. The Maseches Sota, on page 11, that the Gemara tells the following. He said the Jewish people are metaphorized as choyes, as animals, wild animals of the field. Did you ever see that the animals have to call a doula to give birth? I'm not talking about the domesticated animals in the farm, that the farmer comes and the farmer helps give birth. But how do all the animals in the wild give birth? They call a doctor? How do they give birth? They give birth. They're animals. That's just the way it is. So he says, we see the same thing. The Jewish people are metaphorized as animals. Where do we see this? We just read it last week's parsha. Yaakov Avinu speaks about the tribe of Yehuda. What does he invoke? He invokes the imagery of a lion. Aryeh. He says, Gur Aryeh. A lion cub. A young lion. And then when it came to Binyamin, what did he invoke? A wolf. Ze'ev Yitrev. When it came to Shevet Yosef, both in the blessings of Yaakov and even more so in the blessings of Moshe Rabbeinu and Vezeis HaBracha, Yosef is the ox, Bachar Sherei. And then when it comes to the tribe of Naphtali, we say Ayala Shlucha. We say a gazelle set loose, a deer set loose. You can have a question. Fine, that only works for Shevet Yehuda, for Yosef, for Binyamin, and for Shevet Naphtali. What about the rest of the tribes? The tribes don't have animal imagery attached to them. Says Rashi, Umishali Nichtav Aboy, whoever doesn't say about that tribe, a specific animal, Hare HaKosov, Koilulon. The Pasuk includes all of them ultimately. As it says, Vayivarech Isam, they blessed them, all of them. And it says, the Pasuk says, Ishki Brachasi Hashabarech Isam. And the way we understand this is that everybody received the blessing. Because Rashi asks there, Reuven didn't get a blessing, Shimon and Levi got criticism, so they didn't get a blessing. So how could you say that everybody got a blessing? But the answer is that all the blessings apply for everybody. Like the Rebbe once explained, that every single Yid has a specific mission in life, and at the same time, every Yid can only be limited to his specific mission. His or her specific mission is your general focus. However, you also have to spend time focused on, sometimes you do somebody else's job. Sometimes you color outside the line, so to speak. You know, you can't say, "Oh, I don't do that. I only do this job. This is I only give tzedakah. I don't learn Torah. I only learn Torah. I don't give tzedakah. The one who learns tzedakah has to give tzedakah. Has to learn Torah. The one who learns Torah has to give tzedakah. It's only that one is primary focus is Yisachar, and one's primary focus is Zevulun. But everybody has to do everything ultimately. So if everybody has to do everything, then all the blessings in the end of the day refer to all of the Jewish people. And where do we see that there's imagery in which an animal is evoked to represent, to be a metaphor for all of the Jewish people, not only a specific tribe? Rashi says there is a place. In the prophecies of Ezekiel, it says, Va'yiksiv ma'imcha lavi. Your mother is a lioness. Over there, it's speaking not about a particular tribe of the Jewish people, but rather it's speaking about Knesset Yisrael. It's speaking about the general Jewish people. So since we talk about the general Jewish people, and since we use the image of the lion, from this we can understand that even though not every tribe was blessed to be like a lion, every tribe nonetheless has these qualities as members of Am Yisrael. And therefore, Kichoyes Heino can be kind of literal too. And that's why we use the word Choyes, not Bikias, because if it's according to Rashi, you'd be Bikias, you'd be Bikias. Say they were professionals? He says, no, he says, choyes. They were professionals, meaning they were very adept at what they were doing. But there's an underlying idea here. They were not adept because they went to school and learned and trained how to be doulas. Naturally, the animals don't have to go to school to learn how to do it. How do the animals do it? They do it. They're animals. So the Jewish people had that. It was a natural ability that they had. So where does this go? The Pharaoh hears these words. And he doesn't say anything. There's no response. What should he say? They said, when you gave us an impossible job, we can't do it. Pharaoh could have killed him, but he didn't. And Hashem, the Torah says that Hashem was very pleased with the Mialdes. Vayitev elikim lemialdes. God was good to the Mialdes. Vayirev ha'om vayatzmu ma'id. The nation, they increased, and they became very mighty. So The word that has to really be understood here is the word of vayitev. So vayitev is a two yuds with two chiruks under it. So clearly, it was like God was good to the Mialdes. In what way was God good to the Mialdes? What was the reward, if you will, of the Mialdes? Vayirevam, the nation increased, vayatzmumayd, and they became very mighty. So what was good to them? It says God was good to the people. But the pasuk doesn't say vayitev elikim la'am, God was good to the nation. It says vayitev elikim le'miyaldes. So what's the obvious answer over here? The obvious answer is that for Shifra and Pua, what is the greatest reward possible?
Many babies.
Many babies. That the nation increased, that was what was good for them. That's what they were looking for. It's like a person that has a career and he gets a blessing, that his career goes well. The things he's doing are successful. But here it's even more so, because they were so devoted to Am Yisrael, they didn't only not carry out the Pharaoh's wishes, they did the opposite of it. They helped the babies get born, which is really risking their lives. So Hashem was good to them, and they saw incredible success. Everything went in a remarkable way. And they were able to continue to, not only to give birth as before, to help give birth as before, but they did so even more so subsequently. Like the Medrash Seichel Tov says, Heitiv lehem be'ilam haza, and heitiv lehem akeren kayemes le'ilam haba. So in other words, the reward here is not a material reward. It was good for them also in this world. But keren kayem is le'ilam haba, and this is the fact that they got to build the Jewish people, and they were instrumental in that, was a big deal. Now Rashi spends a long time explaining the word vayitev. The Medrash could just tell you it's two yuds because there's two goods. But Rashi basically explains that this is the grammar. I'm not going to go into this, but this something that's how the grammar works out, that when you want to say that it make it into a verb, that sometimes you modify the word by adding a vav and a yud in the beginning. Okay, but still, it says vayitev lemiyaldes. What was the good for the miyaldes? So Rashi says, ma wa'tayva, what was their good? God was good to them and everything went well. But what was their good? What did they get? So for this, you look at Rashi says, you look into the next pasuk. What does the next pasuk say? Vayehi ki yoru ha-miyaldes esolikim, because the miyaldes revered HaKadosh Baruch Hu, because they were afraid of God, not afraid of Pharaoh, or their awe, their fear of God was greater than being their trepidation or fear of the Pharaoh. Vayas lahem batim. So he made for them homes. The question is, who made homes and what kind of homes? What does it mean God made homes? He built a home in heaven and sent a home down? What is going on over here? That's what it says, right? So this is like problematic. I want you to know that many, many interpret this not as in God did it. For example, the Bali HaTosfos say that the Pharaoh prepared homes for them amongst the Egyptian neighborhood. In other words, he moved them out of the ghetto. He moved them into an Egyptian neighborhood. Why would the Pharaoh do that?
Keep an eye on them,
exactly. He says, they fear God more than they fear me. Well, I'll keep an eye on them. I'll be able to monitor every one of their movements. I'll know what they're really doing. I'll sow them, but they still feared Hashem even more. So this was the Pharaoh. Pharaoh took note of the fact that they were more afraid of God than afraid of him. So therefore, v'yaslem batim, he tried to up the ante, make it even more difficult for them. Which means he didn't simply take it lying down. He made it even more difficult, and as far as we know, they just continued doing what they were doing. The Ralbag says something similar like that also. The Chizkuni says something totally different. He says he realized that this plan was not going to work. So what did he do? He built maternity ward hospitals. Vayaslahem batim means not for Shifra and Pua, it means for the women who are about to give birth. And the rule was, when you're in your ninth month of pregnancy, you have to leave home and you have to move into the hospital. So now he can monitor them. The Nazis, by the way, did stuff like this also. Mengele had a special hospital. So he would move people into the hospital. Once you're in that hospital, then you're in big, big trouble. Then there was no way out. So this is what the Egyptians decided. They would build these special hospitals. And from there, they would eventually be able to control their comings and goings, and they would be able to kill the babies. Or so they thought.
They say,
Vayas lahem batim lo. It's a little bit vague here. Vayas lahem, who is lahem? Lahem could be many. Is it Shifra and Pua? Is it the woman who was supposed to give birth? doesn't say. Incidentally, according to the tour, Shifra and Pua were incarcerated. They were thrown into prison. That means Vayas lahem batim. He made them a house. He put them in a house. He put them under like arrest. Whether it was house arrest, they were in prison. So it was not a simple sit. The Pharaoh didn't just take this lying down. However, what did happen, we know as a result of the babies not being killed surreptitiously, the Pharaoh now went in an open campaign of infanticide.
Does everybody accept that Shifram was Yocheved and Miriam? Though?
Yeah, to the best of my knowledge. Yeah. So now the Pharaoh is, that's it. He has no time to wait for plans to go into place. He doesn't have time to wait for things to work out surreptitiously. Now he has to go into an open warfare against babies. He's got to kill babies, infanticide. Why? Because the stargazers told him that Mashiach Shal Yisrael, that the Redeemer of the Jewish people, is about to be born. And they said they didn't even know if he's Egyptian. We can't see. It's not clear to us if he's Egyptian or Jewish. So the Pharaoh went crazy. He said, then kill every baby who was born. So every male baby who was born, all he knew was it was a male. They killed Egyptian babies too. Every baby who was born was thrown into the Nile River. Thousands and thousands of babies were murdered by the Pharaoh.
He even killed his own people.
Killed his own people. Why was it not clear to him if Moshe would be an Egyptian or a Jew? Where did Moshe grow up?
Yeah.
In the Nile.
Right? They made that silly movie. What did they call it? Prince of Egypt. Because he grew up as an Egyptian prince. So in the stargazing, which has apparently some kind of accuracy, although not full accuracy, you could see a Mashiach, a Redeemer, is going to be born. They didn't know what kind of... They couldn't figure it out. The Moshe's early life was such a mystery that they couldn't figure out what the stars, the signs they were getting. But Rashi has a different approach. Rashi says, Vayasla and Batim means that Batim, Hashem rewarded Shifra and Pua, and that's the Lahem. But what's the Lahem? Who made the houses? And remember, I think the biggest problem that Rashi has is the verse starts off by saying, Vayhi ki yara mi'aldes esolikim, because they feared God. So that has to be the reason Vayasla and Batim. Why did the Pharaoh make, if you would say like the Balei HaTesvos or Ralbag, that the Pharaoh made them homes to live in? He said, okay, you have to live here now so we can monitor everything you're going to do.
No,
but what's the beginning of the Pasuk?
Vayana.
The Pasuk is, Vayhi ki yara hamiyaldes. It should have said, Vayhi ki hamiyaldes lo shomu al pare. They were listening. It's not about revering God. Did the Pharaoh know if they revere God or not? The Pharaoh said, I don't know who God is even. So why would he make that as his reason? His reason should be Vayikalishamiyaldisalparaivyaslambatim. So therefore in Pshuta Shel Mikra, it's like it doesn't make any sense to say that. And to say that it's talking about the woman who were giving birth. So what is the first part of the Pasuk? First part of the Pasuk, Vikyorhamialdis. So therefore he made a how doesn't add up. It's a brilliant interpretation. It follows Midrashic sources, but in that case the Pasuk should have said Vayhi ki loy asu, they didn't do. So the Pharaoh said, okay, here's what I'm going to do so that they will do. Here's how I'll make sure it will get done. But like, we're talking about the Yirah Shemayim. We're talking about their level of serving Hashem. How would their level of serving Hashem, or how would their personal sentiment of Yirah Shemayim, how would that lead into the second half of the Pasuk, Yaslam Batim? So therefore Rashi says it must be in who? It's ki yaru. If they were revered, they had Yirah Shemayim for God, then it means Vayaslahem, who made for them? God made for them. If God made, what, God made houses? God's now in construction business? What was like a magic, like the Beis HaMikdash should come down from heaven? God made them a home? Is that what they needed in Egypt? They needed to have fancy homes? The whole thing doesn't seem to make any sense.
So in that case, you shouldn't say Vayaslahem.
That's another good question.
Fine, we'll one thing at a time. So therefore, Rashi says, really, this does not refer to a literal house, but this reward that was built is euphemistic. But a kahuna, it refers to the house of kahuna, the house of priesthood, ulavia, the house of the Levites, umalchos, and the house of royalty. Shakruyim batim, we know these are called batim, Rashi brings a proof. Like it says, and here is a misquote in the Rashi, which the Rebbe spent a long time once fixing. It should have. He wrote Livnes, the Bachar Azetzer, the one who was typesetting. But really, it should have said Habatim es Beis Hashem ves Beis Hamelach. The homes, the house of Hashem, and the house of the Melach, which refers conversely to the houses of Kahuna, which is the Beis Hamikdash, and the house of royalty, which is the house of David Hamelach. At any rate, we see that this is the idea of Kahuna and Leviya comes from Yecheved, because she has a son whose name is Aaron. He's the Kohen Gadol. And then Moshe Rabbeinu is the major Levi. And then Malchus comes from Miriam. From Miriam, eventually, from her seed, will come the tribe of Yehuda, she marries into the tribe of Yehuda, and from her seed eventually comes those who bring about the royal house of David HaMelech. And they trace their lineage back to Miriam. Got it? Kalev ben Yefuna, and so on and so forth. All right, so here's where we're left. We're left with this idea that the house refers to, like, the house of Tudor, the house of Habsburg. You know, it's like people use euphemisms like that. And it's also a Torah euphemism. So that Hashem built them a house. What was the nachas they got from having other babies born? That they themselves received the reward of being able to establish future families. That's the greatest reward. What's the greatest reward somebody does for others? That they themselves have nachas from children. So that was the reward for Shifra and Puah. So now we're going to conclude with a very, very interesting analysis of this reward. Take a look in the Biurim book, page Samach Beis. Samach Beis, Simen Yud Gimel. So the Rebbe here quotes a Medrash. The Medrash Rabbah says like this: Ma'u Schar HaYira. What's the reward for awe, for reverence? If a person has Yira Shamayim, what's the reward? And the Medrash answers, it's a proverbial question. Somebody's Yira Shamayim, so what's the reward you get? Medrash answers, Torah. Torah. Lefi Sheyara Yecheved Bnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Because Yecheved was in awe of Hashem, Hemed Mimenu Moshe. That's why God gave her a son like Moshe. What do we know about Moshe? About his birth, it says Ki Toivu, that he was good. And why was he good? V'nitna Teira al Yadei. The Teira was given through Moshe. Shenikras. The Teira is called Lekach Toiv, a good portion. So Moshe was good, and through him came the goodness of Teira. Miriam, Yatzim Imenu Bitzalel. Miriam is the one whose grandson is, or great grandson, is Bitzalel. And what did Bitzalel have? A lot of chokhmah, a lot of wisdom. And what did Bitzalel build? The Asa Arim La Torah. He made the case for the Torah, the place, the ark that the Torah was placed inside. So therefore, that's also called Toiv, the Torah which is called Toiv. In other words, the Medrash says, it doesn't talk about houses, proverbial houses, but rather it says that the schar, the idea of this, the batim, this is housing the Torah. Moshe Rabbeinu was a walking ark, so to speak. He housed the Torah through him. He was the vehicle, the convention, through which HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave the Torah to the Jewish people. And Bezalel built the ark, or the envelope that housed the Torah. That's what the Medrash says. But Rashi doesn't take the Medrash's interpretation straightforwardly. Rashi gives us a different idea. He talks about houses, houses of Kahuna, houses of Levi, and houses of Malchus. So the Rebbe says, here is a fascinating distinction between Midrashic teaching and Rashi teaching. Rashi teaching is Pshuto Shel Mikra, literal, bottom line, practical teaching. This is like a difference between the practical reward and the theoretical philosophical, theological reward. So Tachlisa Shel HaMedrash, what's the purpose of Medrash? Why was the Medrash documented? Why was it written? Why did Hashem give us the Midrashic teachings? So the Apikursim say that we our rabbis wrote Medrash because around us there was all kinds of stories that developed, and every faith system had stories. We had to go in competition with them, so we created Medrash. We created our own tall tales. That's what the Apikursim say. But they're Apikursim. So we believe the Medrash is Teira. So if the Medrash is Teira, why did God give us the Medrash? So the answer is, what does Medrash share a similar root with? Drash, or a drasha. What's the purpose of a drasha? Freely translated, a sermon. What's the goal? What's the purpose of a sermon?
Teaching.
It's to teach. A class is the purpose to teach. What's the difference between a sermon and a class? The same thing? The sermon is about inspiration. It's l'roimim esadam. It's to elevate a person. It's l'oyder, I say, to awaken, to inspire within him yirah shamayim. As the expression goes in the Gemara Masechet Shabbos, Moishchin libe shel adam ka'agada, that this, so to speak, draws the heart in. It brings in the interest. It creates excitement, like agada. Agadic teachings, that's what they do. V'lachein, medrash madgish be'ikir ma'alason shel hamiyaldas atzman. The medrash, which is about elevating the person, talks about the quality of the person. That's Yiras Hashem Shehoisabahem. The Yiras Hashem that they had. What was the Yiras Hashem? They were more afraid of Hashem than afraid of the Pharaoh. That's pretty serious. Pharaoh was a monster. He'd kill you in a second. Could have tortured them, or tortured their children. Shebeschusa, because they had such Yiras Shemayim. Zachu Lebanim, then they had children. Sheafheim Hayu, Ba'atzma B'dar Gaveya. Because they reached a lofty level in Avedas Hashem, that's why they were able to accomplish or be rewarded with children who also reached a lofty level in Avedas Hashem. Moshe Rabbeinu, who is good, and Bezalel could create the ark for the Torah that is good. Tzadikim, Gedolim, righteous, very, very great and prominent individuals. Rashi, however, Mefarash Halpi Pshuta Shel Mikra. Rashi's got to give us basics, you know, the practical. Here is how we should interpret this. Here's how we need to understand it on a literal level. V'lachein, therefore, Rashi, because he's talking about Pshuta Shel Mikra, Oisik Be'ikir Be'Pu'ulois. Bottom line. Don't give me stories. Don't give me speeches. Don't give me sermons. What should you give me? Bottom line. Pshuta Shel Mikra is about bottom line. So in talking about bottom line, as the expression goes in Meseches Avos, Lo Hamedrash Iker Ela Hamaisa. It's not all the nice stories. It's not all of the fascinating theories. What's most important? Bottom line. What are you doing? So therefore, because that's what Rashi's goal is, Hu Madgish Be'iker Esmailas Maisa Hamialdas. He emphasizes not the sentiment, not the inner feeling, not the that which filled the heart and mind and imagination of Yocheved and Miriam, of having Yiras Shamayim, but what does he emphasize? Their actions. What were their actions? Their actions were that in their merit, many, many Jewish people were able to live. Many babies could be born. And because many babies could be born, ultimately, many houses could be built. What do we call a marriage? A bias neman be Yisrael. We call it a trusted edifice in Israel. The idea of building a family is a home. Not a family lives in a home. From a Jewish perspective, the family is the home. That's what we bless every young chassan and kala with. They should merit to build a bayit neman be Yisrael. Doesn't mean they should merit to win the lottery and buy a big fancy house. It means a family is a home. They built homes. They've laid foundations for future homes. Therefore, what did Hashem do for them? Hashem gave them the ability, the merit, that they should be the progenitors of special homes. Special homes in Israel. What are the special homes in Israel? The houses of Kahuna, spiritual leadership, the houses of Malchus, of political, if you will, or practical leadership. The Rebbe finishes off here with a gewaldige lilmeid hera gedele. We can learn a big lesson. What's the big lesson we learn from this? Iker aschar, the main reward, the main nachas, le'eim ha'yehudia, to the Yiddish mama. What's the main nachas? What does the Yiddish mama look for? And more than anything else, ein rak v'kach shebanah hem gedelim b'teiro b'yir al'atzam. It's not only that she has children who are great in Torah, not only that she has children who are accomplished individuals, but rather eladavka b'hamodas batim li'Yisrael. What does every Yiddish mama want? When are you building a house already? Not a doctor and a lawyer. A marriage. When are you building a house? When are you bringing home children? What does every Yiddish mama want? Grandchildren. That's what she wants. Jewish grandchildren. Batim Yehudim Sheyiladim. Homes full of Yiddish kinder. Nechadim, grandchildren, talmidim, v'talmidim, talmidim, students, and the students of the students, adsof kol haderos. My grandmother used to say to me, when am I going to have nachas from you? But you already have nachas, I'm learning yeshiva, I'm a good boy. No, she wanted nachas. What was nachas to her? If I would get married, that was nachas. Bring home grandchildren, that was nachas. And so this is really the lesson that's brought out to us. It's not only about that Miriam and Yocheved merited to have extraordinary children, special people, but rather they merited to have children who built homes in Israel. And that's what it's all about. All right? So go build your reward, as they say.